Self-taught Indonesian child prodigy, Joey Alexander. He was 11 years old when he played his own arrangement of My Favorite Things. It became the title track of his 2015 debut album. That's him on piano, heading up his band. He's an old guy now. He's all of 14. Larry Grenadier on bass, Ulysses Owens Jr. on drums, Sammy Miller also on drums, Russell Hall on bass, and Alfonso Horn on trumpet. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And as promised, we return to yesterday's discussion because we had more people than time. So we are going to be accommodating those who didn't get a chance to talk yesterday. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And while you do that, I need to remind you that Sunday, March 11th, at 1:30 p.m., your face needs to be in the place. The place being Community Church of New York at 40 East 35th Street off of Park Avenue. I'm going to be giving a little talk there, but most of all, what I want to do is to see your face, shake your hand, give you a hug. You give me a hug. We ought to see each other there for a while and just do some fellowshipping. You know, we talk to each other quite a bit, but we haven't had a chance yet to meet, and this would be a good time to do it, a great place as well to do it. The Community Church of New York at 1:30. This is Sunday, March 11th, and the church is at 40 East 35th Street off of Park Avenue. All right, so let's get started with the subject today, which was, of course, the subject yesterday. We talked about the fact that the president is in a very bad place, personally, professionally, just all around a very bad place, and he is taking us there with him. And we're seeing now an accelerated pace in terms of the people who are leaving, the numbers and the capacities in which they functioned or attempted to function to keep the president on track. As I said yesterday, the going theory, certainly, even in just one person's head, and that's Donald Trump's head, is that there's nothing wrong. He is fine. He's capable and competent. It's other people who are just gumming up the works and trying to torpedo his innovations in leadership, trying to not make America great again. But we've seen enough in the past year. It's now a year and 46 days. And we've seen enough that should trouble anyone who takes this business of governance seriously. It's become a joke. It's become the cesspool that he promised to drain. And it's become very scary because we do not know what is about to happen at any given time. Of course, he will not own up to any of the things that he has done that are just absolutely crazy. I mean, they're not just, you know, you have problems with some of the reasoning. It's just that it's out and out crazy. To solve a mass killing or the potential for other mass killings in schools, his solution, because he does not want to offend the NRA, and he wants to show how loyal he is to the NRA, he is now proposing that teachers should be armed. What kind of a policy mindset is that? So we have way too many indications that we will have to move sooner than we thought on this question of whether Donald Trump should continue to occupy the White House. Too many things are out of order, and they're not good things. It's not that they're out of order because he's trying something new. They're out of order because they are the byproducts of a mind that has collapsed. And here we are. We're just waiting. We're spectators. We're waiting on the sidelines to see when this would all blow up. And I can't help but believe that we're called here to intervene. This is an intervention is needed. What exactly it would be, I don't know. But everybody seems to be afraid of it. Everybody seems to be unwilling to be emphatic about the fact that this is not what this country signed up for. This is not where we ought to be. This is not the leader we should have. These are not the policies that will take this country anywhere. And we ought to say something. Not just say it, but to dramatize it. We're not falling for this anymore. Country is in a very bad situation under the leadership of Donald Trump. What are we going to do? 888-874-4888. As I said, we'll give priority to those who didn't get a chance to say their piece yesterday, and I look forward to hearing from you today. So let's see what it is you think we ought to be doing just about now. We're talking? Fine. What are we doing? What should we be doing? What are your thoughts? You know, when you look at it, you take certain measurements to find out in different spheres of influence how people are reading the situation. And there doesn't seem to be very much concern that we are in a bad place. There's no sense of urgency here. In the entire country, we have only pockets of people making noise, pockets of people calling attention to how dire the situation is from their point of view. But the vast majority of America is okay. They don't seem to be perturbed by it. They don't seem to want to really bring this thing to a head. We're going along and we just, from time to time, we raise a fit. But we are not, we are just not indicating that we are extremely dissatisfied with what's going on. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved.
Hello, Willie. How are you doing?
Okay. You see, in order to make America great again, we have to listen to your president. It's a brilliant idea on the children. Is that right? That's what you want, right? Okay, there's only one question I have. Now, let's say some children go off and mass shooting, and the teachers harm the teachers, right? Let's say they go off and they behave irrationally and shoot a bunch of children. Now, what will we do? All the children and the janitors and everybody, and we all will be safe. What do you think?
Well, I think is what I want us to start seeing is the big picture, because all these small pieces of it are part of the big picture. We just don't seem to have a firm grip on what this big picture is. We are tackling little pieces of it as they pop up. or as we are provoked into tackling these pieces. But I'm looking at what is the big picture here? What is the understanding of the average American as to where we are in the scheme of things? What is going on? But instead, you know, we have this scandal over there, and we have, you know, the issue of the mass killings. We have gun issues. We've got all kinds of separate issues, and that's exactly how we are dealing with them separately. But we should see that they all kind of come under the umbrella of awful leadership. And that's where we need to have a conversation. What are we just going to be spectators to this crazy sport?
Well, you know, we could easily turn this around, I think, and simply through educating the masses of people. And only we can do that, because you, the people within that radio station, they're, you're already doing your job. And one more thing. All we have to do is spread the word. One more thing I want to ask you. I'd like to for you to have like 2 hours, because I think there was a caller before that suggested that 1 hour is not enough. And I am in total agreement.
Well, here's the consideration, though. We have such a broad range of issues to address. It's a miracle that I have an hour at all. Because there are many, many issues really wanting to be addressed, and there are people who are prepared to help us understand the full range of things. So time necessarily becomes very, very limited. So I'm okay. I'm more concerned about what we do with our 1 hour, what we accomplish in way of talking with each other. Thanks, Willie, for calling in and getting us started today. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Trish, how's it going?
Okay. How's about you?
All right. I'm going to have to make a confession. I won't be there Sunday. I was planning on it, but I had a prior engagement. However, I found out last week that engagement's been moved. So when I tried to get a ticket, the ticket was like $300-something. So I was
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so that kind of messed me up, because I could be there, but it was too late by the time I realized that the engagement was pushed. So sorry about that. I'll catch you on the next round.
Yes, you will.
In regards to this, I think we have to have a realization that we are under siege, and we're practically being at war right now. And the thing is that if you are not a rich, white, male person, then you are classified as somebody who they are at war with. So we have to get this understanding of what, you know, what our situations are. Now, the thing is that we have to, Donald Trump, in regards to that, see, Donald Trump is just a symbol of the system that has been implemented in this country for, you know, over a century. You get rid of him, somebody else, probably worse, Mike Pence, would, you know, take over and run the system the way it's supposed to run. So the focus, you know, is, to me, is too much on Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump basically represents the system, and you get rid of him, somebody else comes along and continues the system. We have to build a defense system against the system to, you know, to be able to, you know, do something in regards to, you know, what's good for our communities, because, you know, obviously, you know, one person in an office is not going to stop the system of oppression. So, you know, what we probably have to do is, you know, within our local communities and cities to, you know, build some sort of government, you know, to stop Donald Trump, or people after Donald Trump, to, you know, to, you know, the thing is that we're under warfare, and I think a lot of people aren't, you know, aren't aware of that.
You know, you have a very strong point here. The question is, how many people, I think we have enough people aware of the oppression, but what is accounting for the fact that they're not part of a solution? I don't know what they're doing, but it would seem to me that they ought to be doing something. I don't know. I can't prescribe what they ought to be doing. But I worry that we are not doing what we are supposed to be doing to stand up to a system of oppression that has millions of ways to do us in. What is the answer?
Well, you know, I think the problem is that the system is so complex that it allows some sort of assimilation into it. Now, however, the assimilation is still a form of oppression. However, it kind of, you know, it kind of masks itself in regards to, you know, well, we're not oppressing you because we're giving you a job. But at the same time, they're not allowing you to, you know, spend whatever wages that you have on certain things that they up the price on. I mean, it's like, it's almost like slavery without chains and the whips. So, you know, it's still oppression, but assimilation is a very cunning type of way to get people to realize that they're not oppressed, even though they are oppressed.
Well, that's an old formula, and that's what the outside is doing to us on the inside. I'm asking, on the inside, what do you see happening that gives you some kind of hope that we're getting it, and we're beginning to put a system or several systems together that could help us deal with all these different problems that we're having, that we're not in charge of the policy, we're not in charge of a whole lot of things, we're not empowered to do these things, but we still must address them. We don't seem to have desire or will to be emphatic about solving a problem and, you know, putting it to bed once and for all. We keep going through the same thing all the time, and it becomes depressing.
Yeah, I think also too, we just need to step out of the comforts of our own space and just realize the work that certain people are doing. Like here in Chicago, there's a couple of grassroots organizations that, you know, they don't get the press coverage, they don't get, you know, all this coverage about, you know, what they're doing, but there are people out there doing something. And then, you know, when I listen to your show, you know, I listen to people, you know, and hear about certain things, you know, around the country that people are doing. So your show and, you know, in certain areas around, you know, my parts, I do have some hope. And then at the same time, I try to lend a hand wherever I can, you know, because of the fact that I know these people are doing something in regards to trying to stop the oppression that's been happening to, you know, to us, you know, like I said, for over a century.
Thank you, Henry, for your input today. I really, really appreciate your thoughts. Cece from New Jersey, you're on the air.
You know, and hear about certain things, you know, around the country that people are doing. So your show and, you know,
hello?
In certain areas around,
hello?
You know,
yes.
Parts,
we're getting a lot of feedback.
Oh, okay. Okay. I let me shut this off. Okay, great. In order to hear you, I had to have two phones on because I couldn't get the volume up on the phone that I'm on now. Utrice?
Yes, indeed.
Thank you. This is, I didn't even hear you announce me, but this is Cece of New York, New Jersey. And first, let me say that you are loved, you're liked, appreciated, and I would have a different life if things could reverse and you could have been my den mother. As a Cub Scout, but I'm, as I mentioned, I'm older than you, so that maybe the next lifetime I could be a greater person, which I feel good about myself now to a degree, but I know life would be different. But here's what I want to say. I want to say that from the Human Potential Movement, there are a couple of slogans that I've heard over the decades, and that is, if it's to be, it's up to me. And the second one, if you want something to turn up, begin with your sleeves. And so I'm going to say the first step, I'm going to make a motion, and anyone can second it, and that is that we create an additional email address, and that's Lead Stories Leaders, LEIDERS, at gmail.com. And we begin to work on a movement around your wonderful work of love, your labor of love, the knowledge that we have acquired. And we begin to, you mentioned the inside. We look on the inside and work from the inside. I think there's something out there that's in the dictionary that gets a bad rap that the Haitians had to acquire or allow against Napoleon's armed forces. And we're going to have to do something meta, transcend the physical. We're going to have to do something spiritual. We're going to have to do something with our minds. Those that have heard that thoughts become things, we're going to have to get into the thought process. Unify that thought process to change what's going on. That's what we can do from wherever we are, as I see it.
Well, it's a great thought. But we know that systems are what will save us.
Yes.
So what kind of system, if you could think of an example, what kind of system would you design to address a specific problem?
Well, I would pick up, I totally agree. I would pick up on a system that the Haitians used around Napoleon. And it gets a bad rap. I'm not going to mention it on the air, but 99% of the people know what it was and what it is. And it had created so much fear that it gets denounced in every piece of literature, every dictionary or encyclopedia. So that's one system. The second system, I think, is that we need to rally around you and support, create a system to support your work and this broadcast to do whatever it needs to, whatever needs to happen. I need to be there Sunday. I will be. I'm going to have a guest and see if I can bring a guest or two so we can start there. There's no accident or coincidence that you're coming into New York City and we need to be there. So that's one system. But the major system I think that we can get out there is to recognize the greater power of the non-physical over the physical, as well as, do the work. You know, when they say, when you pray, keep your feet moving. So there's work to be done. That's physical, and then there's work to be done that's non-physical, that's spiritual, because this is what will overcome. It's the enthusiasm that these young people have out of Florida that is they're determined. They know they're not going to be denied, and we have to capture that energy and that force field and replace the doubt or the question or the inability to deliver. And so create the promise, create the commitment, get it done. But it's going to be knowing that it's our time, whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever your circumstances are, this is our time to get it done. So the system within ourselves, my own system, to rise up and support you and understand what needs to be done. I'm going to be bringing some things, we've got to raise some funds. We've got to donate to the show. We've got to, do quite a few things. So I've got a few things. I'm going to send you some things tonight to leadstories at gmail.com that I've created, some samples of a power healing work that will it may be a possibility to raise money for the project. But I think we got to just dig in, and you know, and as we listen to your show, as we listen to your work, and then we'll have the information. It'll and then we just got to expand it. So one person took the prayer out of schools. One person took the prayer out of schools. So you know what you want to bring to it. Can make this thing happen, and it's going to happen through us, and this is the time.
Well, I'm inspired by your thoughts, and I think, just like you, I think we need to have a sense of bravery. It's
yes.
not important to be, you know, to just so readily yield to the, you know, the enormous enemy that we face. I mean, it's all over in all kinds of ways. But we need to also trust ourselves to face down these things. And we can if we pull together. Thank you so much for your call today.
I thank you.
All righty. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hi, Trish. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Tony. How are you doing?
I'm doing great in the beautiful Sunshine State, where we just passed ridiculous legislation to arm the teachers. Governor Scott is ready. It has it on his desk, ready to sign and arm the teachers and fight fire with fire, as crazy as that sounds, right? But
you know, a good thing is happening as well. On the other side of that crazy legislation, we have, it looks like, we have the beginnings of a resistance to that because it's such a stupid idea. The young people are just movie stars galore. They are doing the work. They are determined that the loss of 17 of their fellow students' lives ought to matter, and they are dedicating themselves to seeing to that. But the other part of it is, as well, people are beginning to say, well, why is there such a fear of this NRA that we can't even deal with the logic of the situation? Why is it that an entire government has been just intimidated into discussing rational, sensible approaches to solving a problem of too many guns? Amazing. But go ahead.
And that's what I wanted to elaborate on the previous caller's comment. Basically, this country was founded on the backs of slavery. And when they had the Revolutionary War, most of the countries out there, the superpowers like England, France, or whatnot, they were losing control of the colonies around the world. Okay, like we had the Haitian Revolution. He mentioned the system in Haiti. During the Revolutionary War here, basically what this country did was break away from England at a time when they were going to abolish slavery anyways. So what they basically did was preserve slavery for the next 75 years until they had the Civil War. And then in the early 1800s, you had people like certain politicians, they created the American Colonization Association or something like that, where they wanted, they didn't want the slavery, but then they didn't want the people, you know, the slaves, the former slaves either. So that's where they colonized places like Liberia, and they wanted to export the former slaves to places like South America and whatnot. Now, the thing is that the reason they're trying to fight fire with fire, and that the NRA is so strong, and the Second Amendment is this holy grail, is because that's what keeps them, this white supremacist system, in power. It's the right to bear arms against non-whites. That's why it's so strong. And they really
believe
that.
Well, that's why it's
that.
Also so incorrect, because the Second Amendment came into being at a particular time, and you're correct about the Civil War, and it was a way to arm the citizenry against any possible invasion by the British or anybody else or any other group within the borders of the United States. Now,
exactly. Any uprising from slaves, like what happened in Haiti. And that's what their biggest fear, okay, is that they're going to lose power. And their last defense is to be armed to the teeth with all of this militarized weaponry, okay? And that's, for them, in their minds, is their last defense. Because, really, are they going to take up arms against their own government? I don't think so. And you know, we that are not the privileged in this country are not represented by either the Democrat Party or the Republican Party, because those two parties are the ones playing that game of keeping that system in place. So we have to create a different party, and that unless there's another party that's not part of the you know, because whether you're a Democrat or Republican, they both of those parties, they take money from the NRA. And that's what it all comes down to, is that they're armed to the teeth to prevent any uprising from within. And it doesn't, it's not, has to be a physical uprising. It could be a educated uprising, you know, political uprising. But, you know, the thing is that they're trying to keep a system in place, and that's how you get stupid legislation where they want to arm the teachers instead of regulate the guns, because 17 kids died or 17 people died at that school shooting. More people die in our inner cities every day, and nobody cares. Why? Because they're not the right color, they're not the right economic status. And they mostly die from handguns that are illegally bought and smuggled across state lines. How is it that we, you know, in the most technological country in the world, we can't keep track of all the guns that are on the streets?
Well, it's a very large issue, and you have torn off a piece of it, and you've dealt with it very capably. And you're right in terms of the historical background of it. But it still leaves us with the question of how do we get through this? What is a system that you think would work?
Depending on the Democrat Party, because I believe Trump is where he's at is because of the Democrat Party. Hillary Clinton is one of the most corrupt politicians out there. And it was a choice between a corrupt politician and a corrupt businessman. And people, there's a saying where they say, you know, expecting, doing the same thing and expecting a different result is a definition of insanity. That's why they put Donald Trump into office, because voting for Hillary Clinton would have been the same garbage. It's all the same garbage, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. People say, you know what? They don't like Trump either. The Republicans didn't like him, and that's why they voted for him. But so it's not necessarily Trump's the crazy person, but we are in a crazy system that we quite don't understand the system that we're in, you know, and it's basically a white supremacist system. We had a revolution, but the revolution was to preserve the white supremacist system. It wasn't necessarily to break away from a white supremacist system. And that's why in this country, it shares so much of the same history as Caribbean countries do, you know, with the whole colonization and slavery and whatnot. But yet in this country, and you're from, I know you're from Trinidad and Tobago, but you know, in this country is so racist, and the wounds have not been allowed to heal, and it's because we've never had a true revolution in this country from white supremacists.
Very interesting. And I paid attention, very close attention to what you're saying, Tony. And I thank you for taking us along today. Thank you for your call. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Therese, how are you?
Okay, how's by you?
I am sick. I have a cold, so I'm not okay. but I'm still intrigued from yesterday's conversation, and this is about Trump still, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. So I wanted to just, you know, I wanted to give you this information. I have a lot of friends that are, I would say are very hard left, and I get much more upset about Trump than they do, and I want to also say that I did not vote for Trump and I did not vote for Hillary. I voted for the Green Party, but be that as it may, they feel that he's a buffoon, and they feel that he is, very bad for America. Things like he's pro pollution, and he has put, you know, terrible people in office. But they seem to feel that he was the only solution when it comes to Russia. They voiced an opinion that we would have for sure been in war with Russia had Hillary Clinton gotten in office. And so for that, they think that, you know, we can tough out the next 4 years because a world war would have been, you know, worse than anything that could have been imagined, especially with Russia. And I guess the other thing that people point out was whether we like what he does with North Korea or not. And I have to say I am baffled too, but it is the first time that they are, the North and the South are actually coming to the table to talk to each other. So that is happening under this president, whether we like it or not. And I think that something else that people, whether we like it or not, have to realize is that he is probably going to be the only president so far that's been able to make any, whether they're significant or not. It is not this children's movement in Florida ultimately that will make the changes in the laws. It's him. He's going to make some slight changes in the law, but nonetheless, these are changes that nobody else could have made. And I think that he is disgusting. And these are the things that people point out to me when I ask them, how come you're okay with this? Because for me, I cannot believe, given the enormity of global warming, that we are completely in reverse and we are going full throttle in reverse when it comes to the environment. We just don't care, and we're in full denial of what's going on. And it's so dangerous because you might be able to pick up after a war, but you're never going to be able to pick up after the planet is destroyed from global warming. To me, this is the only game in town, and yet nobody's having not a significant conversation about it. So I think that if you're wondering what some of the people out there are thinking, that this is the thought. And I think the other thing is that there's a lot of people that just don't care what happens to America, because there are many people, although they've never been to Russia and they don't really know what communism is or to live under it, and neither do I, but they have this fantasy that if America should just go communist, that all the problems will be solved, that we won't have any more problems, that's a system that is problem-free. But I don't feel that the system is problem-free. I feel that all these systems have problems in them. And I think that the infection of capitalism has touched every nation in the world. So no matter where you go, no matter what you do, this kind of corruption has bled all over the world into every single country. And we can talk about utopias, but there are none. Even your churches, and I'm sure many, many people realize this, but you know, my own church recently just took $17 million and put it into UBS stock market. And when I objected to this, because UBS has, you know, been brought into court for money laundering, and Wall Street is why you have mega jails. That is why you have populations in prison that will never, ever get out. This is all Wall Street. And yet this is how churches think they should go ahead and they should keep going. And so everything seems to be infected. We do need a new system. And I'm not sure what that system should be, because I frankly don't see that what the communism that I see in Russia right now, I don't see that as a utopia. I don't think that that's, you know, some great place we can jump off to, and that's a great system too. So yeah, we need a new system. But I think that when you're talking to people on the left about why aren't you out in the street? Why aren't you, you know, fighting this buffoon? These are the things that they were terrified of. These are the especially the war with Russia. These are the things. And I guess the other thing I want to bring up is that many people feel that there is, you know, a quasi government at the very top that has nothing to do with us, and that they ultimately make these choices. These people are like, you know, very, very wealthy. Rothsteins, I forget. Sorry, can't think of them from England, but. Thank you. It's a little bit of my cold medicine, okay? I'm not losing my mind. But this is the subset of people that ultimately make the choices for us here in America. It really wouldn't have mattered, but they wanted a change, and they wanted a hard change. And so they allowed this insane person to get in there. And there he is in all his glory. And he is insane. And he is dangerous. I think he's more dangerous to us in America, you know, than he is even to other countries. But when you go back and you criticize him, you know, my friends tell me, well, you're right about all of it, but we still don't have a war with Russia. We still haven't had a war with Russia. And
well, you've given
so that's
a panoramic view. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. I'm asking the simple question. What about you individually? How are you?
I am so astounded, and also I hate him, and I can't watch. I've had a total life change since this guy's become the president. I mean, I'm an activist. I'm usually out there. I got to tell you something. I feel like all of a sudden I turned into a sports person. Like all of a sudden I want to watch the Olympics. And they're okay, but I never had an interest in it before. But I can't watch the news after 6 o'clock at night anymore. Turning on TV every day is a terrifying experience, because I don't know what he did that day. And I don't know what he's going to do. And so I think that me personally, I feel that he's a nervous breakdown for me. Nobody seems to think, well, and also he's not stupid, because he did understand and do enough research on the laws to know that he could get into the White House and he could do exactly what he wanted to do when it's regard to business. He's making so much money because the laws that govern over the White House were so weak that this guy is going to walk out even richer than he used to be. And I'm so terrified about what's going to happen with our medical benefits, and just are we going to be able, if we can get him out in 4 years, are we going to be able to recoup these losses? I don't think so, because I think that when we built our military bases over on the border of Russia, I thought, well, if a Democrat gets in there, we'll fix that, because we don't want to provoke these people. But we didn't fix it. We never fix anything. It's just as the other party does it. I mean, as a matter of fact, he's probably the only president that's ever rescinded things from a president before him. But normally, the way the status quo goes is that he will make all these changes. And even if it is a president that gets in next time, remember, he's had more judges nominated and put in office than any other president in history. He is stacking that White House with the most conservative thinkers there are known. And so whoever gets in next is going to have such a hurdle to go over just to get over these judges. So I think that many people, including my, probably have the same feelings as me of dread every day, and a true feeling of helplessness and hopelessness. I do feel helpless. And I guess the one small thing that I think is common sense that we could change it easily is, I think we should stop voting for political parties, okay? You know, when I run for city council, I can give a rat's ass about the Democratic Party. I need to pick one. So you go out and you pick one. But frankly, please don't vote for me because you think I'm going to be holding water for the Democratic Party. They have done so many terrible things. The Republicans are worse, but they've done so many terrible things to the very people they're supposed to be helping. So I think that it would be really a good thing for us to just start voting for people not knowing their party affiliation, or people just not having a party affiliation. Just vote for the person you think is the right person and shares your philosophy. And I know that this is done because my parents live in a small town in New Jersey. And when they have their elections for the mayor, you're not allowed to know what their party affiliations are. They don't tell you what they are. It's totally separate. You go and you listen to what they have to say, and they tell you their point of view and their philosophy, and people make their decision. I know it sounds simplistic, but you ask for things that could happen, and this could happen very, you know, relatively easily. And I think that maybe we'd actually get a candidate that we all actually like, that wasn't beholden to either one of these parties. And maybe there would be a way to start the ball rolling of having a system change.
Well, you have put a lot on the table for our consideration today, Gwen. In the middle of all of this that you're claiming, you feel so overwhelmed. You're not the only one. You're not the only one. There are lots and lots of people who are feeling this every single day. And we are in the right spot. We are talking about it. And so once we talk about it enough, you'll see ideas forming. And we'll be able to see a way that we individually and collectively can kind of turn things around a little bit. But thank you so much for your very frank assessment today. I really appreciate it. David from Brooklyn.
Good afternoon, Eurytice. How are you
Hello.
Today?
I'm hanging in.
All right, very good. You know, I've been thinking about this, right now, I'm going to bounce off of what Henry was talking about. The point is this, there's a warfare going on here. And people, that's the first thing. You have to understand that there's warfare in the country, and it's the ruling class against the people. And everyone must understand that. And the only way that the ruling class can maintain power, I think, is they have to play the people. And they are very good at playing the people. They have people going against each other, and they do everything they can to do this. And that's the only way they can maintain their capitalist, imperialist system. So everyone must understand that. If we're going to have any change, it's impossible with the system we have, the uniparty system of two divisions of the same group, Republican and Democrat. That's impossible. They don't represent the interests in any way of the masses of people who live here. If you had a party or you had a group in charge of the governance of the country, you wouldn't have the poverty you have here. You wouldn't have the conditions of the people who are living here in very bad condition. So, you see, we've got to understand there's no future switching from Republicans to Democrats or Democrats to Republicans. That's totally useless. And one of the things to do, you talked about what are you going to do. The first thing, everybody ought to withdraw from these two, what I call jive parties that are really one party, and represent the interests of those at the top, not the masses of people that live in the country. So that's the first thing we have to do to get on the road to liberation for the people of the country.
Well, some may say, okay, so you withdraw, which means that you have performed a service for the duopoly, and that is now they're down to the real membership. with other people gone, they're down to real membership, and you would have cleaned house for them. So what happens to these people who no longer are members of either party?
All right, that's the time to organize, to do something different. Because if you do the same thing, that's useless. You know, I've heard some people talk, well, we have Trump in there, and we'll get him out, and we get Pence, and so that's another president. But all the presidents that come out of these two parties are on the same mission, and we got to get that. They're not on a mission to do what is right for the people. They're on a mission to do what is right for the ruling class that controls the presidency. So we got to get moving on that and understand how the system works. That's number one, and understanding the mission of the system and understanding that the only way a system like this can work is when it plays the people. And the other thing was mention of communism. Well, you know, we're not looking for communism necessarily, but the point is there may be other ways of governance that we ought to look into. And so the choice is not between capitalism and communism. We can look into other things and develop a system that is beneficial to the masses of people that I think should be benefited by the government that runs the country.
Thank you. And we leave it there today. We've come to the end of the program. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. And another reminder that Sunday, March 11th at 1:30, yours truly will be at the Community Church of New York. And that's at 40 East 35th Street off Park Avenue. Let's get together and have a great introduction to each other. See you tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.